This episode of Humble and Fred is being broadcast to the world from our state-of-the-art Humble and Fred studio in Puerto Aventuras, Mexico. From our well-equipped Dominican Republic facility with Muskoka chairs on a sandy ocean beachfront. And from Peterborough at Lisa's dining room table next to trendy black sticks in a vase. And is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. And now here are two men with who are actually in two different time zones in two different countries, still pumping out the same damn thing. Hemorrhoids, diarrhea, fist banging, and constipation.
No.
It's Humble and Fred.
Yeah, that would be our law firm.
That's on the wall right below there.
That's right. That's
the reception desk is right there.
That's why we're not in the Broadcasting Hall of Fame. What you just described right there has kept us out of the Broadcasting Hall of Fame because the real greats, that's not what they're talking about. They're beating the bank.
No, yeah.
The birthday song or the birthday game.
the birthday game and, yeah. And
they're not tackling the real issues.
The real issues, that's hard hitting, that's what we are. That's
hey, Dan, what was that list again? What was it? Suppositories, diarrhea, fist banging, and so constipation, was that it?
Pretty close, yeah.
I didn't see how Fred, because Fred writes the description of the show for all the different platforms we're on. I just write the one on Facebook, and I write the same thing every day. Nonsense and more nonsense. Do you? What was your description yesterday? Was it Dan Does Mexico or something?
No. Yesterday was Bill Brio.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yes. I was going to call the show, constipation and dysentery, but I thought, leaves the wrong impression.
Oh, Dale, that leaves the wrong impression.
Yeah.
But the 20 minutes... the 20 minutes we spent about diarrhea and suppositories and constipation, that's not leaving the wrong impression. No, I get it, man.
I didn't want people looking at the title of the show, Constipation and Dysentery, and going, oh, there they go again, and not, listening. You at least had to listen before you got to that content.
That's right.
Which was compelling.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. So many things yesterday that made me laugh and were also interesting. I was going to ask you this before we started. Did you get any more information about the song from Dellen Gray that we were teasing yesterday? Like, for instance, the name of it?
Yeah, it's called Get On Up.
Get On Up. Love it.
Right. I just messaged that to you.
Oh, you did?
Through the chat network, yes. Yes, Get On Up is the name of the song. It's rockin'.
Oh, yeah, man. And at some point, when our friend Pete Cuño, Scary Bald-Headed Pete, formerly known as, when he lets us know the world premiere of this song is available for everyone, we're going to play the full song. This is Get On Up, Dellen Gray. Yeah. Speaking of upbeat songs, if we may. Yesterday, we all were making fun of Eric Carmen dying, because that's kind of the guys we are. And Eric Carmen did more than just All By Myself. I was reminded.
Oh, no, I know he did.
I know, but we're just, this is who we are. We're just dicks. Mm-hmm. And one of the songs.
Hungry Eyes?
Hungry Eyes from Dirty Dancing. But he was in a band prior to that known as the Strawberries. I'm sorry. I apologize.
The Strawberry.
It's weird.
That Toronto band, the Strawberry.
The Wild Strawberries.
Wild Strawberries.
The weirdest thing about that is I'm actually looking at the name of the band, the Raspberries, and I'm about to play one of my favorite songs by them. This was Eric Carmen's band. And Dan, we played this song a lot on rock radio back in the day. So it wasn't just that one mournful song. This was from 1972. It's Go All the Way on Boom. Missed it. Damn. Here we go. Hey, Patterson, this must have been part of your high school.
Yeah, I recall this song. Yes, I do.
You would have been doing this in the grade 12 dance or something.
Yeah, yeah, I know this song.
And what about you, Dan? Does this ring a bell at all from all our many years of broadcasting?
Of course it does, especially the opening there.
Yeah.
Those first few chords, you know, you always feel like you're doing a good job on the radio.
That's right. You're doing a good job because something fast is playing.
Yeah. I'm really doing radio now.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, circling back.
Let's do some circling. Okay. Let's go ahead.
Is there an actual broadcast?
No, I was going to.
Okay, you two talk at the same time. That's fun.
Go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to ask, is there an actual Broadcaster Hall of Fame in Canada? Is there like a place? Or is it just like figuratively? I don't know.
It just exists in our minds.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a place. But there is the, what is it? What is that they crown every year? Is that the Hall of Fame or is that the?
No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, well, Derringer's in it.
Is that called the Hall of Fame?
I don't know if it's a Hall of Fame, but it's something where once a year at the radio and record, well, it used to call it radio and records, whatever that's called now, this convention, they put somebody in the Canadian Broadcasting Hall of Fame. And one year I hosted the big giant event and had to watch while John Derringer, a.k.a. disgraced broadcaster and Voldemort, was inducted into it. This was years ago, Dan. It was quite something. It was quite a gala evening.
I've been to some of those galas.
This is before the scandal broke.
Yeah. I know that there's the galas. I just didn't know if there's an actual place where you can, walk down, in some sort of museum-like environment. Okay.
No.
Pictures on the wall.
No, they're looking for a space.
Yes.
They're looking for a space. But, with the where radio is at right now and revenues and whatever, they really can't afford the space, it seems.
But it's called something, and we can't remember the name of it. Freddie, what were you going to say before we had that traffic jam?
No, I was going to say Derringer won it, and that was before all the scandals broke. And, and now his, Google search, is nothing but... It's not very nice. That's his radio legacy now, which is sort of trumped or, surpassed his... achievements as a radio guy. Too bad, but that's the reality of the situation. In fact, I had heard a couple of people, one in particular, that was had said if he's not taken out of that Hall of Fame or recognition, whatever it is, she wants to withdraw. She wants her name taken out.
Well, I can guess who that would be, since... Would it be the former host of the CHFI morning program?
Well, this is what I heard, okay? This is what I heard. It's alleged. And I wouldn't be surprised either, because, again, as a woman broadcaster and what his legacy is now and browbeating and emotionally abusing women, she doesn't think it's a fit for her anymore. Which is a noble stance.
Yeah, very nice. I mean, and there, as we just discussed, it's not an actual place. It's an award and a life. I think it's a lifetime achievement of some kind of thing where the real broadcasters, not us, Dan, the real broadcasters were celebrated. And I think this happened. I can't remember if I hosted that. I've hosted it a couple times. But the last time I hosted it, were we doing this? I don't recall, but it was within the last 15 years, and it was one of those nights where it was just weirdness. I had a good time. I enjoy getting up in front of people, but it was weird because backstage, Ryan wasn't allowed to talk to me, and Derringer didn't say anything to me, and it was just a weird vibe all around, and then, of course, what's happened subsequently. But we've had this discussion, and just to briefly say, if Pete and Geets aren't in it, they should be recognized along with, the achievement that this broadcast team has given to the Canadian landscape, Dan.
No, I agree with that. It's hard sometimes to put the spotlight on yourself. Not too hard, but, you know.
Yeah, we we're managing.
To put the spotlight on yourself. But, yes, Pete and Geets, you know, on some level, pioneers of FM wacky morning radio should have been recognized long before now. And that's all I need to know about all that stuff. Yeah. So.
Well,
that's the way it is.
I can just imagine
it. And it turns out the shining star, you know, the great one, turns out to be a big, fat, fucking asshole.
Yeah. We haven't. Are you a little on a delay? Somebody's on a delay on this.
Yeah. There's something going on here. But
Fred has a bigger delay than both you and I are.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is we want to re-engage the Zoom thing because it's happened a couple times and it doesn't normally happen to us.
Okay.
What do you think about that, Friedrich?
So what do you want to do?
Well, we can just quickly have you guys re-engage I'll just shut it down and start again.
You're going to start restart the show then?
No, not restart the show. I'll just talk for a couple of seconds while you guys come back.
Oh, okay. I'll leave and then I'll come back. I'll count to 15 or something.
But Dan, I'm going to shut, just to be clear, I'm shutting down the entire Zoom thing. I'll just keep recording.
Oh, okay. Right. All right.
All right. All right, everybody. So there's going to be a little brief pause here while everybody does that. It doesn't happen very often. It has to do with our internet connections are so different. I will, while we're doing the, have a little musical interlude here. And this is one of my favorite versions of this song. I'm playing it because I was talking to Fred before the show started, and it turns out in Toronto today, I just looked at the Weather Network forecast. And 17 is the forecasted high, but Freddie says that there's a chance it could get up to 21 degrees in Toronto today. I'm playing Sublime Summertime because, as I just said to the audience, you and I were talking about the fact that in Toronto today, it could get up somewhere between 17 and 21 degrees on the 13th of March, which I don't care how you slice it, is definitely unusual, especially given the last couple of weeks. It wouldn't be unusual if it just happened once, but the way the weather has been for the last two or three weeks in the GTA, completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I hear the rest of March might go south. And listen, I don't sit down here in the Dominican Republic hoping bad weather on anyone. I hope it's nothing but the best for everyone. I'm not that type of guy. What? Seriously.
Well, no, but that would be weird if you were. It would be weirder. It's weird to say that you're not that kind of guy. Because it would just be like, hey, did you know that Fred is the kind of guy that sits down in the Dominican and just hopes the weather is shit everywhere that's not where he is? Yeah, I heard that.
You don't think people do that? People do that when they're away. They're hoping the weather's shitty at home. Sort of justifies the expense or whatever.
Yeah, the thing is, I definitely agree with you. But in this particular case, I'm going with the other side, which is the weirder. Yeah, of course. But you know what that is? When people come down for a week, you know, they're hoping that the reason that they spend all this money to go on a one-week vacation away from winter is they want to get away from winter.
Right. That's it.
So part of feeling good about your vacation is that you feel ripped off if there was a really nice warm day like 17 degrees we're going to get here in Peterborough today.
Yeah,
that's it. It's just one of those quirky little things. No one's harmed through it, but that's the way it works.
That's right.
I think
no human beings are harmed through our this weird. No, it's true. Although I'm not the type of person either to sit down here in Mexico hoping the winter is shit. I'm happy for all the friends up in the city that aren't having to endure. But it is like in the 30 plus years I've lived in the GTA, there's always days in March where some of the escarpment courses are open, but not like it is this year. I don't recall it being this early I was talking to somebody about why some of the courses are open early, not just the weather. It turns out it's because the ground never got that super frost, that permafrost. So right. that it's not, so the courses are open and it's not doing damage to the grass.
Right. I'm just wondering, fellas, and again, I hate when this happens, whether I should just go boot my modem. This has, reboot my modem.
All right, you do that. I'll talk to Dan.
You know why? You can talk to Dan because we haven't had this problem at all. You know, it's just weird.
And we're not having it on my end. It's only you.
Okay. Okay, well, then let's proceed because...
Reboot the modem and I'll do a Dan Duran interview.
Okay, right on.
Okay. But you have to leave the meeting.
he's just doing it. So, this is...
he literally just, for you people who aren't watching us, he just got up and he put his little headphones down. How do we tell him to leave the meeting then?
Well, yeah, when the signal disappears...
Yeah, it'll stop, I guess.
It'll just stop, yeah. But until then, we can listen in on what's going on in the Patterson vacation.
Now, let's talk about, because I was thinking about the weather. You were telling me about the ice fishing. And Dan used to live right on a lake near Peterborough called Lake Chemung. And I visited a few years back when you had the first place, the big cottage slash house on a lake through the wintertime. And that wasn't that long ago, because I remember you and I and girlfriend Lisa and ex-GFR, this is three or four Christmases ago or that season, where we walked, we did a walk on the lake. It was fully frozen. Right. Tons of ice fishing huts. So just give me the perspective of what does a normal winter look like up there and what does it look like this year?
Well, around Christmas, it freezes up and there's ice fishing hut regulations, believe it or not. You have to have it licensed because they used to just leave ice fishing huts on lakes. It melted and then they'd become a boating hazard. So they have to they can't put ice fishing huts on the lake before January 1 and in this region. And then they have to take them off by March 15th. That would mean that normally there is ice on the lake that can hold cars and things until March 15th.
Right.
And they were late in starting. I don't know if they actually ever got any huts on the lake because it didn't freeze deep enough, I don't think. But it's open water now where that part of Chemung Lake is.
Well, get back to what you said, though. It used to be people would just leave their huts out there through the summer or wouldn't collect them. How do you leave an ice fishing hut on just out in the lake?
Well, they were probably, really shitty shacks. Shitty shacks. And they, they threw something together on the ice and then just left it there. And then it would sink when it melted. And then
so in a normal year, there's the end date is the point I wanted to make. It's the 13th of March as we record this program. So
and
normally, 15th, you'd have to have it off. But that would mean some years there would still be an opportunity, even into later in March, where people would be still, even though the government says no. I got to turn this back on here. So that's the difference now, is that they've barely been able to, it's barely been frozen enough to put a nice fishing hut on it. And now it's been open water for quite some time. Okay, look, you're back.
Yeah, and it sounds way better.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that was the trick. Maybe I should do that every morning before the show. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, on the weather subject, again, I'm fascinated by those who continue to discount climate change or global warming, whatever you want to talk about it. I sent Dan a story today about a bald eagle's nest, the first one they've ever sort of found in Toronto. And, it's those little things that creep me out a bit. When you actually get those distinct environmental or nature changes, I mean, that's where the proof is,
I'm sorry, is the bald eagle not supposed to be in Toronto?
Well, from what I gather, yeah, it's a very unique situation. And, and there's lots of stories throughout the world about, animals changing habitat. I mean, we see it a bit with Canada geese. And again, not to harp on Canada geese, but, you know, they used to all migrate, and they don't anymore.
Dan, anyway, did you get that story? Dan, do you see the story I sent you?
Which one? Oh, I'm looking now.
I sent it to your email.
Okay. By the way, there is a story that came out a few days ago, and I think you referenced it, Howard, yesterday, that February marked the Earth's ninth consecutive warmest month on record.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got that from you. The story I sent you, Dan, if you don't want to do it for the news, I'll bring it up because it's pretty fascinating. It's about a baby that was born on an airplane.
Well, go ahead.
No, I don't need to do it now. I'm just saying if you don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm. He can do double shot power.
Yeah, do double shot.
Double shot power.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of quirky things happening all over, you know, to the ocean level here in the Dominican Republic, to animals, you know, inhabiting areas that they didn't before, on and on and on. And it's a bit disturbing. Do you not agree?
Oh, absolutely, I do. I was just looking at something else that's kind of disturbing. Did you see the story that my brother sent for you? About getting out of Stephen is worried about you.
Who?
Edmonton Steve. Crisis in Haiti prompts thousands to flee to Dominican. And he's just wondering when you're going to get out. Are you going to talk we're going to talk to Tony about that.
Yeah, definitely. Listen, it's sort of on my mind, but almost from a comical standpoint. Like, deep down, I know there's nothing to worry about, yet at the same time, you know, this island isn't that big, especially when you come from Canada, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This landmass I'm on isn't that big. And literally within hours, evildoers could be
that's right.
Could be right here in Cabarete.
And
but then again, they probably go to the main cities first to wreak their havoc. But who knows?
But you never know. Like it could be a situation where we're going to have you airlifted out of there. You know, given the status, your celebrity status, they're going to want to come after you and hold you hostage.
Yeah, but the airport will be crazy.
Yeah.
Thousands of tourists will be there hanging onto airplanes as they take off. There'll be fights break out, people wanting to get on board, pushing women and children out of the way.
That's right. And then when they find out it's Fred Patterson, they're going to go, make way! Make way!
No, I thought what I might do is because we have great travel coverage through the chamber plant. In fact, you know, part of it, if need be, they would have actually airlift you out of the country if you're ailing with something. So maybe I'll get someone to shoot me in the knee or something, and then I'll have to be airlifted with a doctor and nurse.
I don't know. I was going to say, I don't know if as good as the chamber plan is, and it is the best, I don't know if they've got hostage coverage, but if anyone does, they will. So, yeah, but apparently the border crisis there between Haiti and the Dominican is heating up.
There is a border crisis? An actual border crisis? Oh, sorry, comedy, right?
No, no, this is not comedy.
Oh, I thought it was.
I have to keep pointing out when the comedy's happening.
Good, because I didn't know there was a border crisis. I know there's a crisis there with the gang.
Crisis, I just read the headline. Crisis in Haiti prompts thousands to flee to the Dominican from Haiti. It goes on further to say that gang violence in Port-au-Prince has led to the internal displacement of 15,000 people in just the last week of February.
It's not a crisis, but there's always a border issue between the Dominican and Haiti. I mean, it's apparently a pretty strict guarded border. But again, when they've released thousands of prisoners from prisons in Haiti, the gangs have, I guess, to spring their gang members And you just wonder. I mean, when the country's sort of in disarray and there's no real government, how do you stop people from moving throughout the country or even leaving the country into the Dominican? I mean, honestly, they can't guard every square inch, I wouldn't think.
Well, you can say there's no crisis, but according to this story in Le Monde, the Haitian-Dominican border, in the second paragraph it says, is experiencing one of the most serious crises in recent decade.
Fuck. Anyway, okay, great.
Listen, you're not nearly worried enough. This is what you're going to do. Listen, you're fine. But we'll keep, Dan Duran, we get the newsroom on this. Let's keep monitoring this situation.
Right. Well, by the way, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say the Haitian prime minister resigned yesterday. And I think he's stranded in Puerto Rico, and there's been some meetings about him. And then then the gangsters are jostling for power in Haiti, and that's causing this crisis, I think, right now.
Yeah, his name's Ariel Henry. He was in Puerto Rico. Apparently, he met with Trudeau. Did Trudeau fly to Puerto Rico or something to meet with the guy? Again, how that's not too high level when you meet with Trudeau, but... Yeah, he's going to resign, and they're going to try and get some kind of a government in there. But yesterday, while sitting on the Muskoka chairs looking out over the ocean, I was looking around at other people. You know, there was people kite sailing and people swimming in the ocean and people walking along the ocean. And it made me think of that whole ignorance is bliss thing. I'm thinking, do any of these people, are they aware of what's going on in Haiti? Do they care? Have they opened the newspaper?
Yeah, they don't seem to be as worried as we are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know what you should do? You should say, hey, kite surfer, just come here for a second. look at this. Canada has, I think we've gave them 80 million, not a lot of money. I just can't remember what the story said. We've either reconfirmed or we've given them the amount of money that we were supposed to give them. Somehow, that's what Trudeau is there for.
But traditionally, that's been their problem. They've had guys at the top, you know, they get aid, foreign aid.
Yeah.
And they steal it.
Yes, they do.
It's a shame because there's no reason, you know, as part of the same landmass as the Dominican, there's no reason they can't be a country with a good, healthy tourism industry. But it's never been allowed to happen because of the civil unrest. People are afraid to go there, have been for years.
Well, why don't we just table this and we'll circle back. We'll just pause this and maybe come back to it when Tony Clement joins us in about 15 minutes time. Because there's going to be some discussion of that and what Canada traditionally does and why can't Haiti have the same prosperity as the Dominican Republic. There's a story, and again, I don't want to get into it too deeply. You know, this third party candidate in the States, RFK, Robert Kennedy Jr. Robert, what's the F for Robert? Doesn't fucking matter.
Francis.
Fitzgerald.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, is it Francis or Fitzgerald? One of them.
This is the kind of thing where it sounds like it's coming from a developing country, what we would normally call, a third world country. RFK Jr. will announce his vice president pick soon. Aaron Rodgers and Jesse Ventura are on the short list. Now, Jesse Ventura doesn't sound as kooky as Aaron Rodgers.
No, he's been a governor.
Exactly.
You know, at least he's got some experience.
But when you see that a potential vice presidential candidate is Aaron Rodgers, immediately, like, is there nobody in that group that goes, maybe that's not the best look for us?
Yeah, I don't get it. Because, Aaron Rodgers, he ain't that bright when you listen to him talk.
No.
You know, he was a great guest on Joe Rogan because he was another guy who sat there and, you know, tried to leave the impression that he knows a lot, but he doesn't know a lot. like caught in all sorts of, again, misinformation and lies and anything that, you know, cherry picking all the stuff he wants to enhance whatever government or political slant he's got. And yeah, for him to be. But then again, look, you've said it before. Who'd have ever thought that the guy that hosted
The Apprentice
would be president?
That's right.
So this guy was quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. So why not?
And like, the Jesse Ventura thing, when that happened back in 1999, he was the governor of Minnesota for a few years. At that time, it seemed super cool. 99 to 2003. At that time, it seemed like a quirky thing, and maybe kind of like when Gopher from The Love Boat became a senator. Fred, what was his name? Or Sonny Bono became a senator. It was a bit of a quirky, out of the ordinary thing. But now that the former Apprentice host was the president, as you said, it's all fine. I mean, you know, why not Aaron Rodgers? Why not? Why not him as vice president of America?
Yeah, the precedent has been set.
Yeah.
And, you know, even people like Sonny Bono and other people that, Steve Garvey, used to play for the Dodgers, Major League Baseball player. He's going to be up against Adam Schiff for the California Senate seat. You know, if you ascend through government, regardless of who you are, if you ascend through the government, then one day you earn those big, lofty positions. But a guy like Trump, and in this case, a guy like Aaron Rodgers, to go right into the White House is, like, not so good.
Yeah, I mean, think about Ronald Reagan. That was a bit of a joke back in, again, you younger people wouldn't remember this, but it was kind of a bit of a joke when he became president as this sort of former movie actor, but he'd also been the governor of California. To your point, he had risen through the ranks of government. He had served people before. Arnold Schwarzenegger never had, but he was a fine governor. And being governor is not being president.
No.
Donald Trump had never been on any council, had never volunteered for any organization other than his own, had never served. That, and that's what is another, again, I don't want to segue into Trump here. I actually want to segue into an NFL story. But that's the problem with Trump, is he's never served anyone. There's never been a purpose that he's had where it's other focused other than himself and his family. Although, did you see that? I thought of you guys, but did you see that picture? I'm sorry, video of Trump as he's leaving the rally. He's shaking hands with people. He's walking through the crowd and he sees Ivanka, his daughter, and he gives her a big hug. And right next to Ivanka is Donald Trump's probably 6-ish, 7-year-old grandson. Mm-hmm. And he walks right by the kid. And the cameras are on the kid and his face is just sunken. He's like, it's like Trump didn't even see the kid there. Mm-hmm. And I thought of you because I thought, you know, of all the people you would have walked by, the one kid that would, the one human being that would have caught your focus would have been your grandson.
Of course. And I mean, these things happen in the spur of the moment. I'm just surprised he didn't grab Ivanka's tits, to be honest.
That's right. He's walking by, grabbed her ass, ignored the grandson.
Honk, honk. After all, he has intimated that he wouldn't.
Oh, yeah. You know,
she wasn't his daughter. He wouldn't mind doing her. So
that's not too creepy at all.
No, not at all.
No. Dan, where do you stand in all of this?
It's Francis, by the way. It's
your name is Francis?
Yeah, because it was the president was John Fitzgerald Canada. Kennedy. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and it was Robert Francis Kennedy, his dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was funny. Dan, where do you stand on all this? It's Francis, by the way. Really, after all these years, you're changing your name to Francis. All right. Listen, man. Why not? Dan's transition to Francis. Now here's Francis Duran with the news. Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay. Before we get to Tony Clement and the Bodog story, or the Bodog thing, did you guys hear, Freddie, did you hear about the NFL fans at the at a fall, I think it was Chiefs and Dolphins game? Did you hear about this?
Okay. What? I don't know. You'd have to tell me first.
Well, I'm telling you right now. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to find it. I had it. I can tell you what it was. Apparently, some fans were so unprepared for the temperatures during that game. It was like, you know, I don't know what it was in Fahrenheit, but it's probably minus 10 or 15 Celsius. And now they're having to have their fingers amputated.
Yes. Tons of them got frostbite. Yes, I heard that story. And it's come to that. You know, there was idiots there that day that actually had their shirts off.
Had their shirts off, exactly.
Well, they deserve what they get. But as far as digits go, that's pretty severe. But that's how cold it was that day. But listen, when was the last time you were at a football game? An NFL game? Or have you ever been
to one? Yeah, of course I have. Yeah, years ago.
Okay, well, like when I won't go to Buffalo anymore. And listen, I drink. You don't. But the crowd, it's very, sometimes very uncomfortable because so many in the crowd are so pissed from the tailgate parties. By the time they actually get to their seat, they're already hammered.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So I can see that, you know, a big party day and they were making a joke of the weather and it's like, look at me, I'm a big drunken asshole and I can, you know, take my shirt off. So I'm not surprised by this.
Well, that's what I was going to get to.
And I'm sure a lot of it is tied to alcohol. I bet.
I watched that game, and just as you described it, they were, hey, Francis. Francis. Yeah. There were, you know, here in Canada, when it's minus 15, we don't take our shirts off. You know, for the most part, we keep, that game was filled with drunken people, mostly guys. Mm-hmm. Who decided that it was a big joke, that it was minus 15 or whatever it was in Fahrenheit.
Right.
And now those guys, and then looking back on it, now that they've sobered up, now those guys are having their fingers amputated because of this extreme frostbite.
Mm-hmm. Does it make, like how many were, you know, holding beers with their bare hands?
Yeah, yeah.
All afternoon. And then you're half cut, so you're not really totally appreciating the cold, or now that you know the blood actually in your fingers is starting to freeze. I've seen enough in Buffalo to know how these guys carry on, so I'm not surprised.
I have experienced frostbite as a kid on my feet because I would stay out on the open ice rink that we had at the end of our street, you know, too long, and I just remember when that feeling of. And I only had like frostbite where your toes get a little bit, they start to turn a little bit white. I remember that feeling when they would thaw out, how painful it was, when it would start to get prickly and then it would start to sting.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't drinking.
That wouldn't happen until you're...
What's that, Dan?
That wouldn't happen to these guys. Probably wouldn't happen until they've sobered up.
Well, that's what Fred's saying. Until they realize that they've been outside all afternoon with their shirts off, drinking, you know, beer after beer.
I just looked it up.
Dan, in those cold, bitterly cold...
Sorry, the delay there.
Those cold, bitter days and... Okay, go ahead. Yeah, it's fucked up today. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it was minus 20 with minus 33 with the wind chill in that game. I looked it up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was in Celsius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Fred.
No, it's, you know, the moment's passed because it just felt good for me to say something on those cold Edmonton days. Did you ever take extra measures with that appendage of yours?
Ah.
Because it was so far, from your body. Was it more susceptible to freezing? But again, the moment's passed. It's lost all its fun.
Did your granny ever knit you a dick toque?
Nope.
Nope. Okay, listen, I don't know what's going on with the feed today, but there's definitely a delay somewhere. And it's,
yeah,
I don't think it's coming from my end because it seems to be the two of you somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, probably me. I don't know, though. I've got other stuff on here. I've got television on that's running through the internet. I've got, you know, I've got my research board here where everything I type in comes up like in real time. So I don't know. Is it a Zoom thing or, you know? You know, have the Haitians started to, you know, attack the infrastructure of the Dominican already?
What do you think it is, Dan? Do you think it could it be my internet somehow?
I think, yeah, it's either at this point because it's the hosting. You're the host.
I am the
probably
host.
More. It wouldn't have anything to do with me and Fred's connection, I don't think. It would be more to Zoom. So it's either Fred to Zoom or it's Zoom to you, Howard. Just saying.
Well, I mean, let's try and get through the rest of the show, and then I'll reboot my computer and redo Zoom, and I'm sure that'll figure it out.
And your modem, too. Have you done it since you've been there?
No.
Because I have found down in these areas, like, I do it quite often here. I haven't done it in a couple of days, but it just seems to be a good practice. They get bunged up pretty quick for whatever reason. I don't know.
Yeah, but I would say the same thing you just said. I had, you know, was streaming television last night on my computer. Mm-hmm. Everything on my computer is running in real time. And we've had this problem with Zoom before. And sometimes it's just as simple as I need to restart my computer. But we're too deep into it now. So Tony's going to join us in about 4 minutes. Dan, you'll join us. We've got Jay Bondi with us today. So somewhere in the, you know, between Tony and Jay Bondi, fit yourself back in. We'll do the Dan Duran news. Oh, I'm sorry, Francis Duran news. And we'll try and listen. What, you know what? This doesn't happen very often to us. We'll try and get through this.
Well, you know me, glass half full. I was just about to say that of all the remote shows we've done. I mean, even the ones we do in Toronto from different locations.
Yeah.
But we've done Mexico and we've done Dominican and we've done other places. We're batting about 990 as far as success rate. So the odd time things are going to happen. You just live with it, right?
We're definitely putting up Hall of Fame numbers. If we weren't so hated by the radio industry, we'd be right in there. All right, Dan Duran, we'll see you and your good face. If you do whatever stories you want. That baby on board the Air Canada flight that was born is an interesting story. But first, Freddie, let's take a second
through that.
Yeah, let's take a second and acknowledge some of the people that support this program.
Well, we talked about it earlier, the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. Brett Tanner was on the show earlier this week. He laid it all out. Yes, some increases this year, but compared to the rest of the industry, very low. And that's one of the great things about the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan. As a nonprofit, they can hold the line on premiums, and they've done another great job this year. Yeah, considering all the things we've been through, yeah, premiums are going to pop up a bit, but again, they've held the line pretty well. Dental, prescriptions, and therapies, and as I said, travel insurance, and all sorts of things. A mental health component. They still add products through this. It's the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business, chamberplan.ca.
I just want to apologize to the Facebook people because when we restarted the show or restarted the Zoom feed, I did not restart the Facebook feed. I have now. Let me just send a message to Tony. Stand by. I heard from Brett Tanner yesterday. Has asked me if I wanted to host the Chamber Plan Awards banquet again this year, and I said yes, I will be happy to do that.
How many years in a row is that now? How many years in a row is that?
Many, many. It's fine, though. I really enjoy it. They're a good group of people, and it's kind of cool because the last couple years you've gone to the golf tournament, and I've done this.
Mm-hmm.
And happy to be part of it. Happy to be. You know what? It's always nice to be asked. When it comes to investments, again, you know, we don't like to tell you what to do with your money. And we certainly appreciate you spending your time with us. But when it comes to an investment, you might look at least have our Sherpa or your Sherpa look at Boron One. It's the world of boron, and as we've been explaining in the last year or so, that it's not easy to get boron out of the ground, and these people seem to be doing a nice job of it, or they're certainly getting ready to find out. They're certainly getting ready to do it and find out more about the process and how Boron One is expanding their junior mining company to a place that very few of these companies ever get to, which is actually creating a mine, a working mine. Find out more. And hey, listen, we make no claims about investments, but at least have a look at the company. Boron One and BoronOne.com. Okay, let me get Tony all lined up here. Tony Clement, Tony. Let's see if there's a delay with Tony. Hi, Tony. Welcome to Humble and Fred.
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, good. Man.
Yes. Loud and clear.
Good. Good. Nice. Greetings from Washington, D.C.
Just going to ask you, before the official introduction, you look like you're in a hotel room doing some kind of big-time conference somewhere.
Yeah, it's a conference on critical minerals, energy transition, and national security.
And, well, that's why. See, that's a big brain stuff that he's involved with, Fred.
And I know what this question to sound wrong. How do you end up there? Like, we know you end up at these things because you have a big brain, but why? There's lots of big brain people that aren't there. Why are you there in particular?
Well, I have been doing some work in this area. One of my side hustles is I'm co-chair of something called Reshoring Canada, which I co-chair with Sandra Pupatello, who is a former Dalton McGuinty cabinet minister. So we've sort of crossed the aisle to work together.
And bipartisan, they call that.
Mm-hmm. Bipartisan. And so we're all about being an information and advocacy organization to promote more resilient supply chains for Canada. Because what we found out during the pandemic was when we needed vaccines, we didn't have any ability to produce those vaccines in Canada. When we needed PPE, protective equipment, we didn't have that in Canada. And it became, a health security issue. And there's also critical minerals, which is something that we need to create electric vehicle batteries, for instance. Mm-hmm. Well, we need a critical mineral supply chain that is not controlled by China. China controls 80% of the critical mineral supply chain in the world. And that may not necessarily be in our interest.
Well, this is why. See, a lot of our guests aren't, involved in changing lives. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had a guy that's putting Botox into people's penises. That's a different type of guest.
Different guest.
So for years, Tony, of course, was the assistant manager of this country. Seriously, though, during his time in the House of Commons, Tony served as Minister of Health, Minister of Industry, President of the Treasury Board, and Minister responsible for the Federal Economic Development Initiative for Northern Ontario. And it goes on and on and on. And after all of that, he's also hosting a podcast now.
Right. That's right. And another thing podcast.
And another thing podcast.
200 episodes in the next few weeks, which will be amazing. And it's great. It's a lot of fun. As you know, podcasting is a brave new world out there. And, although we cannot climb the summit of Humble and Fred podcasting, we still have sponsors, so we've monetized it, and it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, listen, one of our listeners has sent in a question for Tony, and he's a longtime contributor to the program. Often gives us musical suggestions. He's a great guy. His name is Keith Weiland. He says, "Can you kindly ask Tony Clement his thoughts on the new Charlie Crockett, and if he'll be going to the show at Massey Hall next month?"
Yeah, no, they're great. I love that band. I got to know them because their manager is a Canadian guy. Jason Murray is his name. So look out for that name. He also manages the Glorious Sons, actually. Anyway, so Charlie Crockett, a great sort of outlaw country band.
Yes.
And They're just terrific. Yeah, I can't say enough good about them. So yeah, it's on my list of things to do. They're also playing Blues Fest in Ottawa, by the way.
Well, there you go, Keith. There's the guy that used to be, you know, semi in charge of Canada with a little musical update.
Hey, can I just add one more musical thing for you?
Absolutely.
So last night I had a free night after the conference, sort of wound up around 7 o'clock. I had a free night in Washington. So as I typically do in these situations, I scan the concert listings locally, and I found a great band from Nashville called Thelma and the Sleaze. And I got to see them play. So I'd recommend them if you're looking for some trash pop.
Well, Tony, you actually play in a band, don't you? Or dabble with playing with a band all the time as
well? Yeah, the Dog Spiders, they're no more, Fred.
Right.
The Dog Spiders are done, but I do jam Wednesday nights locally in Muskoka, so we've got a good jam group going. So maybe that'll come to something.
Okay, well, there's a couple things we wanted to get to today. We're going to get to the situation in Haiti because it affects my man Fred there because he's in the Dominican. And I'm just wondering when I need to get him airlifted out and what's the process around that. And obviously, we'll call you for some of your government contacts. I did want to talk a little bit today with you, as we have over the last 5 months, about the ongoing situation in the Middle East and what your perspective is on it from the following standpoint. Because obviously, people are now have come around to the idea that Israel, you know, needs to do something because Hamas isn't going to stop. So what's your perspective on two things? One, what should Israel do, or what do you recommend Israel do? And then I'll ask us a follow-up question, Mr. Clement.
Yeah, they're obviously they're in a tough spot because there's a lot of pressure on Israel. Everybody's forgotten to talk about the hostages. Everybody's forgotten to talk about October 7th, the initial attack. And now all the pressure is on Israel to exercise restraint in their military operations, which is kind of like that's kind of new in the world. Like if you remember back to World War II, no one said to Britain or America, exercise restraint when you're bombing Dresden. No one said that. Mm-hmm. So, but all of a sudden, the aggrieved party, which and I would say is Israel, has to exercise restraint. So, there's a great phrase I've used in politics that comes from Macbeth. Lady Macbeth said, "If it were done, when 'tis done, then 'twere well it were done quickly."
Mm.
And so, I think what Israel has got to do is get to the other end of this military operation, which involves, Rafah, I guess is the name of the city, and get to the other side of that, and hopefully their security situation will improve. They're going to be condemned on all sides, whatever they do in terms of military activity. So I think the best thing for them to do is to get it over with and get to the other side.
And there's no, I just wanted to follow up. I wanted to ask Fred, if I may, is that, you know, there's no doubt now that the worldwide reaction to this is also fascinating. There was a protest the other day in front of the opening of a Holocaust museum. The protesting, the anti-Israeli, anti-Jew thing has gotten out of hand. But the interesting thing for me is that there's been no Jewish people protesting in front of, you know, name a bunch of institutions protesting the attack on October 7th. You don't see a lot of Israelis or Jews around the world saying, "Hey, remember when we were attacked?" I think I know the answer, but I wanted to get your perspective. How turned around is this in our time?
I think that what I've noticed, however, is that there have been, memorial sessions and activity to about the people that were killed. And then there have been not protests, but, you know, activity saying, look, release the hostages. And I think that's kind of appropriate for the diaspora, the Jewish community to keep the focus on the hostages, because that's an open wound, you know? I noticed that as well. There's been some counter protesters whenever occasionally when the let's just call them pro-Palestinian protesters are out there. There are sometimes some counter-protesters. But it's tough because, you know, it's almost, for the Jewish community, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, where if they're too aggressive in their protesting, then all it does is heap more calumny on them. So there's it's really just a difficult situation for that community. I talk to many people, my friends and neighbors in the Jewish community, and they are feeling like folks, they are feeling that they can't go to certain areas of the city without feeling like personally that they may become under attack. And that's true in New York, and that's true in London.
And can you imagine any other community feeling that way, what the outcry would be? And yet it's like, yeah, that's fine. Now Jews feel unsafe in certain communities. That's okay. You know, fine. We're okay with that.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but it still shocks me that, you know, Canada, which is supposed to be a place where people can feel safe despite the terrible things that go on in the world, now we've got a whole community that doesn't feel safe. And I'm not trying to diminish. There have been attacks on Muslims in Canada as well. That's not good either. All of these things, people should give their heads a shake.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
My perspective, and I've said it on the show before, to the point of frustration, is all these protests are one thing, and again, they seem unfair. Why these pro-Palestinians, never do I hear an outcry against Hamas by those people that Hamas caused what they're going through. It's never, we must stop, as a Palestinian, we must stop Hamas because look what they have done to us. Look where they've put us. I never hear that. It's anti-Jew.
I think if you were a Muslim and you wanted to say something against Hamas, would you feel safe saying that?
Mm-hmm. Even in Canada? I don't see it in the protests in Canada. I never see signs, stop Hamas, by a Palestinian. So, I mean, these are the perpetrators. These are the horrible things that took place on October 7th. I don't hear anything about that from these people. It's all anti-Jew. I just find it very peculiar.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this, Fred, in the days and weeks and months ahead, but I bet you there's a lot of pressure within the Muslim community to toe the line, basically. And if you said something contrary to that, your family could be in danger.
Yeah. And what's come out of this? And again, this could be years. Mm-hmm. This will be discussed for years. But the most peculiar thing to me is the reaction. Like I get why Palestinians would react the way they do. That even makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How other people reacted and how they've taken the side of the Palestinians so quickly, the woke, the liberals, the socialists, how quickly they have ignored what you just said, Tony, that, you know, if a trans person or a black person or an Asian person was on the news in Toronto talking about they feel unsafe going to certain parts of Chinatown, people would be freaking the fuck out. But Jews, it's like it doesn't matter because they're Jews and this is Israel, and instantly everything Jewish and Israeli is bad. And I don't think I've ever seen a reaction to a community the way that people feel free to react. And again, I can get my head around the fact Palestinians are upset. That makes sense. But the rest of the world is just a little bit quirky to me.
Well, it's kind of in this bizarro land that we're in. The Jews and Israelis are now occupiers, right? Which is kind of bizarre since Jews have been there for 3,000 years. But anyway, they're the occupiers.
Yeah, I know.
And so consequently, they're part of the problem, not the solution, according to the Marxian view of things, which apparently has been adopted by socialists and progressives. So I just think it's a dead end for them. And now you've got, I have no idea whether this is accurate, but on social media, there are these posters in New York City being plastered where it's saying, you know, babies are the problem too. And if we have to kill babies to get what we want, that's okay.
Sure.
You know, that's the kind of the logic that eventually happens in these absurd situations.
I saw something where it said, you know, like, listen, Jews mostly just want to be left alone. And the people that are, you know, they're fighting just don't want to be left alone. They want to kill all the Jews. Jews aren't walking around. Again, I know the Israeli IDF. I know the response is being criticized. I get it. But Jews in general aren't walking around the planet saying we want to kill all Palestinians. That's not the vibe we're giving off. Moving on to something else. Fred's in the Dominican. Haiti's on fire.
Yeah.
You've been in government a long time. Maybe, as they say in the real shows, set the table for us with what's going on there. And should the Fred man be worried in the DR?
Well, the amazing thing about the DR is it never seems to wash over to the DR. It's always, you know, half the island is on fire. The other half is, I think, quite peaceful, unless I'm missing something. But Haiti, of course, for decades, has had dysfunctional government, corruption, armed gangs, and all of this has come to a head yet again, where the head of government had to resign. He couldn't get back into the country. There's one of the warlords in Haiti whose nickname is Barbecue, and I don't think that's because of his barbecue skills with ribs or chicken. You know, his nickname is Barbecue. He's the guy that shut the airport down, that broke into the jail and released hundreds of jailed prisoners. So you've got this situation where there's total anarchy. Government is completely dysfunctional, and who pays the price? Well, it's the civilian population. So now there's a proposal, an international proposal, to have a seven-seat provisional council that will kind of rule the roost until there can be elections. I think there's going to have to be some kind of negotiation with some of these armed gangs, which is terrible. But I don't know what the other solution is. But so far DR is not affected. It's Spanish speaking and not French speaking, and a different history on the other half of the island. It's amazing.
And traditionally, unrest in Haiti has not led to problems in the Dominican. No. I've done a little research lately looking at, you know, has there ever been a situation unrest in Haiti has led to problems directly in the Dominican? And there isn't. It's quite the phenomenon, as you just laid out. It's, you know, relatively a small landmass. I mean, especially to a Canadian who comes from a huge landmass, to think that there's this line almost down the middle. And, you know, I'm going to nice restaurants here, and the other night I'm in this place eating this big fat pork knuckle and enjoying myself, drinking a beer. And I honestly thought, you know, just a couple of hundred miles from here is the most impoverished country in the Western Hemisphere. It's like, right. How does that happen?
Yeah, but why is that, Fred and Tony? Why has it never spilled over?
Well, I mean, obviously, one part was ruled by the French and the other part was ruled by Spain. So they have a different history that way, and different language, etc. So I don't know what is it mountainous where the line, the dividing line is? Is that maybe you can't cross the mountains? I don't know, but it just doesn't.
Right.
I would have thought there'd be hundreds of thousands of Haitians trying to get to the Dominican, but they typically tend to leave and try to get to New York or Montreal. You know, Montreal's
a huge place.
Yeah.
But speaking of the gangs that seem to be in control right now, it's probably in their best interest to stay in Port-au-Prince, right? Because if they want to take control, coming to the Dominican Republic isn't going to solve anything. So anybody that from Haiti that probably came to the DR would probably not be gangs and not be evildoers. They just want a better life. So
I would agree. I think that's absolutely true, Fred. You're right on that.
So. Before we leave Haiti, though, and I want to ask you some Washington questions, but you know, you mentioned the warlord whose nickname was Barbecue. It would be funny if his nickname was Barbecue because of his amazing rib recipes. Like, if that turned out to be the case. So you're in Washington. You're talking to the Washington insiders, as you often do. And here we are just months away from another election. Do you get any sense? Is there any conversations you're involved with where people you know inside that world? And what do they have to say about the latest nonsense that's going on in U.S. politics?
Well, I think if you're a normal American, you're just looking at the choices and saying, oh, my gosh, how did we get to a point where it's these same two guys again? Because, you know, there definitely is a feeling that they could do better. So but here they are. And it's going to be Biden versus Trump. Unless there's a huge health risk or something that happens, that's on either candidate, not just Biden, then that would be the way it's going to be for the next few months. So the table is set. Each candidate has very high negatives. Each candidate disapproval rating, I think Biden's disapproval rating is 56%. Trump's disapproval rating is 52%. And so the campaign is going to be a miserable campaign driven by the other guy's negatives. I think that's what, so as Americans are not happy with this, believe me, they would like to have other choices. I think, you know, unless you're part of the kind of the elites within each part political party, you would love to have another choice, but it's not, the table has been set and they're both now what is called the presumptive nominees. They have enough delegates. They're going to win the nomination. That's the way it's going to be.
Tony, help me with something, because traditionally over the years, a lot less has brought good men down, actually. The argument, Donald Trump found liable for sexual abuse, sexual assault. The sitting judge said it met all the criteria of rape. Yes, it was a civil case. That seems to be the excuse for this guy now. And it's hard for me to believe that even at that level, he survives through being by a jury being found liable for sexual abuse slash rape. And he survives. Like, is that any excuse on any level? OK, it wasn't a criminal course. It wasn't a criminal case. It was just a civil case. Is that where we're at? That's the defense? Like, is there any validity in that?
Well, I mean, I guess it means he isn't jailed for it because it's a civil liability rather than a criminal liability. But in terms of paying a political price, which is, I think, what ultimately you're asking, he seems to be the exception to the rule. And the only explanation I can offer you is that people are willing to overlook all of his many failings because they see him, you know, I'm trying to be charitable here. They see him, Trump, as a vessel to convict the political class in America because they have been overlooked for so long. And the political class has been lining their pockets. I'm not saying Democrats or Republicans. I'm saying both.
Oh, yeah.
Lining all their pockets and looking after their own interests in Washington versus the interests of so many of these people who have been overlooked and forgotten. So he becomes a means to an end.
Yeah, but the irony is, he's never done a charitable thing in his life. He's never served in any level in his life. He's never thought of anyone else but himself. And again, the irony is the people that support him are the people that he is going to screw over and never really helped. But what I think Fred's getting at is a sentence I came up with a few months ago. And I think I've talked about it with you before, is the sentence is there used to be a time. There used to be a time when a guy would make fun of his opponent stuttering, or there used to be a time where a guy might get convicted for civil rape. Can you imagine in the days of, you know, Gary Hart, Bill Clinton, George Bush, name a period of time where the candidate would be found liable for civil rape or whatever it was, sexual abuse, that would be the end of it. And the thing about Trump, though, is what's fascinating as well is that every day, yesterday or the day before, there used to be a time if somebody revealed you were praising Adolf Hitler, that would be enough. But that's mm-hmm. what's fascinating about mm-hmm. this. And I'll just finish by saying, Tony, because I know that you, you're I wouldn't say an evangelical, but you have a faith. And as a man of faith, the fact that the evangelicals support him, from your perspective as a man of faith, that's got to be not just bizarre, but there's so much hypocrisy around it.
Well, humans are known for hypocrisy.
Yes, we are.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. One of my lines: the only man who ever lived who wasn't a hypocrite was Jesus Christ, and they crucified him for it. So, mm-hmm. Look, I can't disagree with anything you're saying. It's a troubling time in America. The only thing I can do to live with this as a political, viewer or used to be actor is to think, mm-hmm. think more longer term. Because when people say to me, America has never been more divided, that's wrong. 750,000 of them died in a civil war. That's kind of divisive. Or mm-hmm. during the Vietnam period, cities were burning in America. So America has been more divided. So hopefully they can get through this period to a period of peace and tranquility again. That's mm-hmm. that's what I pray for Americans. That's all I can do.
Right. Well said. It's true. I mean, and again, the choices aren't there, but again, from sitting, in Canada and looking down there, one way out is avoid the orange man. That might just be a good start.
And Biden mm-hmm. did very well at the State of the Union. I'm sure you've talked about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they mm-hmm. gave him beforehand, but whatever they gave him, I want some of it too. Because he's very, very energetic.
But see, it seems like we're from a simpler time when elected officials didn't yell at the president during the State of the Union.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like those are the sort of common decent norms that Donald Trump's world has created, where it's okay for someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene to feel emboldened to wear that stupid jacket you're not supposed to dress that way when you go to the State of the Union, but there we are,
Right.
Well, honorable members. I don't know.
Yes.
As I said to Howard too, the choices aren't very good, Biden and Trump. But so beyond that, you have to look at those who surround those men. And I'll take Biden's posse any day of the week as opposed
and
to those
sycophants. Here's another thing to look at, because you guys are mm-hmm. such, good political observers. Basically, over the last week, there's been a purge in the Republican National Committee.
That's right. And 60 of them were gone. And,
Trump fired them all, installed his own people. That's going to have an impact down ticket. You mark my words. Mm-hmm. Trump is not impacted mm-hmm. by that because he's in control anyway. But what that means is the Republican National Committee can control who's getting nominated, who's it well placed in a primary to be the candidate down the ticket, down in Congress and in the Senate. It could have a huge impact on the Republican Party as the MAGA Party as we approach November.
And the other thing, again, not to get too inside, to people who aren't as into this as we are, basically, Trump took over the machine that is the Republican National Committee. 60 people that were there that were non-Trumpers were fired. So beside that effect, there's also 60 people now that are disgruntled, pissed off, that are going to start talking about the real goings on of that world. And I think that's also going to have an effect. Well, there you have it. There's Tony Clement, another fantastic appearance. Don't forget, Tony is not only a podcaster, he's a broadcaster. He's on. What is the television that you're doing?
It's on a broadcast called The News Forum, and I have a show called Boom and Bust, which looks at sort of business, economic, and national security issues. You can find that at Bell 506 or Rogers 107.
Fantastic. And thanks, as always, for your contribution. Here's a little Charlie Crockett as we say goodbye to Tony. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, guys. All the best.
Appreciate you.
Okay, see you, Tom. Thanks.
Hey, did you hear what Tony said? We're keen political observers. I like that.
Mm-hmm. I'm a $10.
I mean, yeah. Whether it's true or not, Tony said it.
Maybe that's a fact.
Hey, Fred, man, why don't you...
Tony said it. It must be true.
Well, exactly. Why don't you do a little something for us before we get Jay Bondi in here? I've been seeing this
portrait. Right on. Let's talk about Bodog. Whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker casino player, Bodog, your number one source of online gambling entertainment. From their industry-leading odds, world-class sportsbook, and feature-rich poker room, to their fully loaded casino and racebook, they've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. That is Bodog.
Yeah, man. Already know. Just let me get Jay inside the Humble and Fred Zoom Theater. That's what we should actually call it, the Humble and Fred Zoom Theater. And I got a couple other things to do while I get Jay settled here. Before we officially introduce Jay, let's make sure all the microphones are working and Jay Bondi's with us today. Mm-hmm. Jay, can you hear us okay?
We got you guys. Yeah, good morning.
Okay, just stand by for a second because we are having a little trouble with our... It's not you, it's us. Let me make sure this is working. I've got the Sherpa theme. There we go.
There we go.
Hanging in for the Sherpa. It's Sherpa 2, Jay Bondi. J.Bondi at RaymondJames.ca. And you know him. We've been getting to know what he's all about. And Jay, welcome back to the program, my friend. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, guys. Hope you enjoyed your time away last week. And it looks in this part of the country, what a beautiful day we got. About 18 degrees it's supposed to get up to today. So
I was just going
to
say that. Have you heard, like, all I hear from my golf buddies in Canada, in Toronto especially, is how many GTA courses. There's a bunch of those escarpment courses that have opened up.
Yeah, absolutely. Had a friend of my son's go golfing yesterday at a local course, and they're probably getting a little dampness on their feet, but getting to swing the stick, so not a bad thing.
And you haven't been out yet, though?
No, I've been asked a couple of times, but nope. Staying grounded, and I'm still very much a fair weather golfer for sure.
No, I get right. It, man. I know.
So am I.
Yeah, I'm saying. Well, here's the thing. If I were in this, I might go hit some balls, but I'm not ready to play. Just that the way the season, you know, there's a long season in Canada or where we are, and I'm just not ready to play yet. Let's get to last week. We talked to Jay about the importance of identifying goals and priorities as part of your personalized retirement projections. What do you want to focus on this week that we can share with the people?
Yeah, I mean, your personalized projections, you know, what they are meant to do in kind of step one of our process is they're meant to help guide us on an investment journey, kind of lay the groundwork and the foundation for what your investments need to do for you in order to, satisfy those goals and objectives you have. You know, this week, you know, my focus is really on, understanding that and then working a portfolio so that it delivers on those long-term goals. Again, our good friend, Mr. Nibblesworth there, or professor, has very savvy in his expectation of you cannot earn a 7-8% average return, doing that every year. That would be great, but you need to have a little bit of opportunity. You need to have a nice amount of certainty in your portfolio. And ultimately, we need to find that nice rhythm in the rate of return. And it's really not one size fits all. I mean, it's really got to be customized for the individual, depending on what stage of life they're in.
Yeah, I guess. And again, based on how much money they're working with and how much they're willing to risk, right? How deep
absolutely.
They want to go
absolutely.
On the risk factor.
One of the biggest factors everyone, forgets about, they only focus in on that rate of return number, where for us, we want to factor in that risk-adjusted rate of return and also the taxation on how you're earning it. Again, a lot of people are saying, hey, GICs are a great spot to be right now, 5% free money. You're getting paid that in interest, right? So when you go to tax time and you're claiming that full brunt, where there are other options and opportunities within an investment portfolio to get dividends paid to you, to get capital gains. And those are much better come tax time. So, you know, that risk adjusted return as well as that that taxable return are definitely things that we like to focus on here for the clients and have them better understand the benefits of that.
And I think that's why you say not one size doesn't fit all, and how some things can seem one way on the surface and different when you dive into them. But let me talk a little bit about what you've given us in terms of notes, the standard deviation, correlation matrix, and something called diworsification. Did I say that correctly?
You got it. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the risk adjusted returns are basically something that we look at. We look at it more than most, and we look at the upside and downside capture. Simply put, all those fancy definitions and words, standard deviation, the mean, Sharpe and Sortino ratios, all these things we like to capture clearly for our clients. And what we simply say is the upside downside capture. If we get more good when markets are going good than bad, we're winning. If we are getting in times when markets go down, because they do go backwards, you know, are we getting less of that? And if we are, then that spread between the good and the bad is where we win for clients. And we don't try to hit home runs, you know, for any clients. We just try to be that nice single double hitter who performs consistently for people. So that's the risk adjusted return and the benefits of understanding what an upside downside capture ratio does for you. The other one that we talked about is correlation matrix. Or diworsification, Howard, you mentioned that.
Yeah, what
and,
does that
and ultimately,
mean?
The diworsification of a portfolio is a lot of people have a bunch of different holdings that they've been kind of sold over the time. But when we get a chance to analyze them for clients or people that become future clients, we find that they really just have a whole lot of holdings that are doing the same thing for them, and they don't truly have any diversification. So we like to truly explain that to people and go through how a correlation matrix can help them smooth out the ride, which is really what we try to do as well.
Well, that's fantastic.
Very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
No, I'm saying all the...
Go ahead, Freddie.
No, it's you go ahead, Howard.
Let's go ahead together. We're having a little trouble with our Zoom today. Although it's funny because we're not having any delay with Jay. If you don't know if your portfolio is built to satisfy your personal retirement goals, we encourage you to simply reach out to Jay and or Tim and the team at Sherpa headquarters for a no cost, no obligation personalized review. As many people have done over the past number of weeks, maybe you can explain that. And once again, we encourage you, even if you've got somebody, this isn't going to cost you anything to have this team have a second look. And listen, we're talking about your retirement. We're talking about a lot of people's, you know, what they have to live on the rest of their lives. It's an important thing, right, Jay?
Absolutely, guys. And again, we encourage that for everyone. You know, ultimately, it's a simple question. Do I know whether my investment portfolio is going to help me satisfy my goals and objectives in retirement? That's the question we can ask ourselves. And if we can't answer that honestly, knowing that, yes, I am set up that way and I've had that conversation, then opening the door and opening that that opportunity for that conversation is all we encourage. Again, it's a little bit of an eye opener when people, you know, can really dig into that. And a lot of people, as we've talked about, are hesitant to, but the sooner they can get the motivation to do it, the better.
Fred Mann, are you there still?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep. Okay. I think the delay has gotten worse. Well, anyway, let me just say it's j.bondi at j.bondi at raymondjames.ca, or go to retirementsherpa.ca. And once again, it's a no cost, no obligation, personalized review. And what Jay just said about it being an eye-opening experience. Not only is it eye-opening, but it will be very pleasant. All right, Jay, man.
We try to have fun along the way, guys. Thank you so much.
Okay, Jay.
Enjoy your day, gentlemen.
Thank you, you too. And enjoy your, if you get a chance to get outside today. All right, my friend.
Try to sneak away.
Yeah, I think what's happening there, Freddie, is the delay is mostly on you, because I noticed going back and forth with him, there was no delay between him and I.
And there was no delay between him and I either. It's weird.
Yeah, well, as you said earlier, it doesn't happen very often.
How can you explain that? Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, even right now.
Yeah, I just started talking.
How are we talking over each other?
I have no idea.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
I don't know, but we've got just a few minutes left in the show, and then we'll figure it out for, as you said earlier, what I was saying is that it doesn't happen very often, but it's definitely happening now. And I think the solution is my computer, because I haven't shut it down in a few days. There's Dan Durant. Dan?
Yeah.
What we've experienced is that when I was talking to Tony, and we were just talking to Jay Bondi, they and I weren't experiencing any delay. Same with Fred and them, but Fred and I are. What do you say about that, Dad?
It starts to get confusing. Because it doesn't seem like it.
So you didn't have any delay between you and I just now?
No, I think it's fine, yeah. Fred seems to have a really big delay for some reason. So it may be Zoom to Fred in some way.
Yeah.
That makes the most sense.
But I rebooted, so I guess whatever the problem was remains.
Well, it could be the Haitian rebels.
But even with Dan, like when I'm looking at his mouth, I mean, this is fascinating for the listeners. You know, I'm seeing him moving and his mouth on that mic moving and like right on time, and it's weird.
Yeah, but the problem is you're seeing it, but you're coming in. I'm hearing you come in a second behind.
Well, okay.
We're gonna finish the show today, and we'll figure it out, everybody. And hopefully, it's not too irritating. Fred, are you all done what you need to do?
Yes, actually, Howard. Yes.
All right. Well, then, would you just please stand by as I talk about this fine supporter of this program, Mike Kazarian, one of the broker owners of Lender's Choice Mortgages. You know, we were talking to Jay Bondi there about a no-cost, no-obligation review. Same with the Kazman. They own and operate this company, a member of the Mortgage Alliance, license 13582. There's the legal stuff out of the way. The thing that's going to save you money is their experience. They're independent brokers, but Mike has been in this business a long time, nearly 30 years. He understands how banks work because he's been in this world. Now, as an independent broker, the benefit for you is that you take that experience, and they don't just work with banks. Like most of us, you know, our mortgage comes up for renewal, we just go to the bank and go, okay, what should I pay you now? What these guys do is they take their years of experience and they work with over 75 different lenders, whether that's banks. Yes, they work with banks, credit unions, alternative lenders, private lenders. The idea is they're working for you on your behalf to get you the best rate, not only the best rate, the best term, the best fit for your lifestyle. And maybe your goals are different. Maybe you don't want to pay off your mortgage right away. You've got other things you want to do with the cash. That's why you need to get a hold of Mike Kazarian right now, even if your mortgage is up next year. Start making a plan with Kazarian and the folks at Lender's Choice Mortgages. Give them a shout. You have them look at what's going on. Lenderschoice.ca. I can't wait to see what Dan's come up with today, because you send him a story, I send him a story. It's like a surprise. It's like a news surprise.
It's all wrapped up in gift wrap.
Dan, are you ready?
I'm ready, yeah.
All right, here we go.
Now, here's to a fella named Dan Duran, a hell of a guy with a hella big wang, the quintessential anchor man, his voice is nice and low. Huh. Dan Duran, the anchor man comes, as for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here, he's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now live from Lisa's house once again, the matrimonial home of Mr. and Mrs. Giebert, with news and views based on his many years as a fake newsman in movies, TV shows, and for stereo shops on a Saturday. You know, he's like one of those guys that's spinning a big sign. Anyway, here's Dan Duran.
Don't forget the gorilla suit.
Yes.
Radioactive worms live. One of the origin story tropes uses radioactive insects, and now new research shows that the Chernobyl worms are radioactive resistant. Somehow, despite the war going on around Chernobyl, worm scientists managed to study microscopic worms from the most radioactive place on Earth and figure out that they have a high capacity to withstand damage to its worm DNA. So if worms can withstand Chernobyl-level radiation, perhaps one day they can be used to understand how to protect DNA against, carcinogens. So cancer may be solved through these kinds of worms. Or maybe we can create superheroes.
Mm.
Worm boy, maybe.
Yeah.
Just power to...
Is this one of the studies?
Mm. Is this one of the stories you sent?
You guys talk.
Oh, don't get frustrated. Is this one day? Go ahead.
No. I'm saying you guys talk because it's just totally out of sync here.
And so, I'm saying you talk now.
I said, oh, these studies are amazing. Who comes up with these thoughts? Who would have thought to study a worm? But see, it loses something in the delay.
I'm just curious. Who sent... Because Fred sent you a story... I sent you a story, and you said, no, those stories are dumb. I'll talk about radioactive worms.
Okay, you know, since we're having a meeting on this, like, the worm, you know, there's a worm there. I thought there was, you know, a gift of, you know, some sort of penis, something or other. But no, you guys are worried about, it's not one of your stories. I have the second story.
Stand by. What? You know what, Dan, you're absolutely right. Because of the delay today, we're off our game. Because on a normal Humble and Fred show, mm-hmm. we would be all over your radioactive dick. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I dangled the worm right there.
You know what? He's right.
Well, okay. What you did was make an editorial decision. I sent you a story on a bald eagle, and Howard sent you a story on a baby being born on a plane. And, you know, like any good editor, you chose the story that you thought had the most impact. Right?
Right. And my second story is the Howard story.
Here's what I want you to do. I want you to save the second story because this is just too much for us to go back and forth. Mm-hmm. So you all save the second story. Tomorrow it's baby on board or airborne. Get it?
That's good. I'll write that down.
We're going to try and get this fixed because this is Fred and I. You see, in any other circumstance, radioactive worms from Dan Duran would be 10 minutes of giant glowing dick jokes. But not today. So,
run its course.
Tomorrow we've got emails, and we're going to try and get this thing fixed again. And thanks to Tony Clement. Thanks to everybody that had patience through today's program. And we'll see you later.
This episode of Humble and Fred was brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, and Lender's Choice Mortgages. For contests and comments, we read the emails, humbleandfred@humbleandfredradio.com. We got the big show coming up. Humble and Fred and humbleandfredradio.com, the big show where we, you know, read the emails out loud. So tell us what you think. There's still time. And something you can do to help us out is subscribe, tell friends about us, share an episode, maybe rate the podcast. That would be great, too. For Humble and Fred, and from the Humble and Fred Zoom Theater, I'm Dan Duran. And remember, rebranding theaters is common, and the H&F Zoom Theater could be a sponsorship opportunity for you. It could be, insert your name here, Zoom Theater. Call now for this limited time offer, and enjoy every goddamn day. Clap your hands.